Wednesday, February 27, 2019. Logan, everyone, I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters, the fastest growing podcast in all of ESPN land. That's what they tell me. And as always, there's a lot going on in the world of mixed martial arts. We are on the road to UFC 235, rapidly approaching this Saturday in Las Vegas. It is the return of John Jones. We just saw him fight. Now he's back. This is great. Against Anthony Smith and, of course, Tyron Woodley versus Kamaru Usman. Dare I say the deepest card of 2019. And yes, I know 2019 is just 2 months young, but it is the deepest card of the new UFC on ESPN era. So we have a lot to talk about as far as that card is concerned and a bunch of other things. And I must say, my streak is over, my friends. The streak has been busted. I have tried each and every week to present a new panel. The streak ends today, but it's for a good reason. Back by popular demand, I was told last week's episode was the most downloaded episode we've ever done in the 7 week history of this show. So they're back. The heartbeat of ESPN.com, the brains behind ESPN.com/MMA, Greg Rosenstein, the man in the shirt, Jeff Wagenheim, they are back in the flesh. Greg, how are you?
I am amazing. How are you?
Why do you never sound excited?
I'm very excited. It's a great time. We're back by popular demand. It was definitely based on Jeff and myself and not GSP.
That is actually Greg's excited voice. Right,
that's his excited voice?
Yes. You don't want to hear the other one.
All right. Well, excited voice. It's good to have you guys back. Welcome back. And I'm excited to talk about 235. Greg, you're going to be there, right?
I will be there, yes.
Jeff, you're not going to be there.
I'm not. But I will have an excited voice.
They don't
today.
Let you just out of the cave here.
They don't. They bring me, they tell me to come down here. They put me in a building all by myself, and that's it.
So I said it's the deepest card of 2019. That's accurate, right? You guys don't disagree with that? I mean, it's only been 2 months.
I'm trying to think back to, in 2019, yes.
Yeah, 2019.
Yes.
It's a great card.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of appealing things. The way I look at that is, if I take away the main event,
yeah,
do I still want to watch this thing? Right. And I sure do. In fact, if you take away both title fights, I'm still interested. So that says a lot.
Okay, so let me ask you this right off the top. Greg, I'll start with you. There's a lot of great storylines heading into this card. The return of John Jones on, you know, a 2 month break since his last fight. Anthony Smith, perennial journeyman, finally getting a title shot. Our own Brett Okamoto had a great feature on him and his journey. Tyron Woodley back, and it's always fun to see him continue to rack up title defenses. Kamaru Usman's first title shot, the return of Cody Garbrandt after losing to TJ Dillashaw this past summer, the return of Zabit Magomedsharipov. There's a lot to like, and I can keep going. But I want to ask you, most interesting storyline heading into Saturday, what's the one storyline that you're really excited about, that you're really intrigued by? Because there's a lot to choose from, right?
Right. And for me, it's actually something I don't think you even mentioned right there.
I love it.
I think it's the return of Ben Askren.
That's right.
Because, you know, he comes over from this trade. That's never happened in history of MMA. He was dominant in other organizations. He was an amazing wrestler in college at Missouri. I'm very curious to see how he does against the top competition. And I do feel like, for some reason, Robbie Lawler hasn't really been talked about at all recently. Mm. Is that just me? I mean, I don't know. I feel like everyone thinks Askren's going to win this. I personally do as well. I think he's just going to be able to take Robbie down and beat him with ground and pound that way. But I'm very curious to see how Askren does in his first UFC fight.
I like that one, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm also interested in that as well. And what you said, which is the storyline that you're most interested in? I understand the appeal of storyline, and there are certainly some storylines. You know, John Jones has a storyline, Tyron Woodley has a storyline, but I feel like the fight that is most appealing to me, I think, is Zabit. Hmm. Let me see if I can say it. Magomedsharipov. Is that right? Yeah. I never can.
I almost view it as two separate names.
Yeah.
Magomed and Sharipov. It's very easy.
It's great. But I just love those kind of crossroads fights. Those are the fights that always have appeal for me, and we've seen a few of them even so far this year. And this one here, you've got this guy who has all the hype behind him, and now he's facing one of these veterans who's just the kind of guy that can spoil that for you. But he's also the kind of guy that you have to be able to beat in order to really reach the upper echelon in Jeremy Stephens. So, I mean, I know there's also that whole other level of Jeremy Stephens. When he was on your show the other day, he talked about his own personal problems. And I think that is also adds maybe to the story of the fight. But I'm just talking about the fight itself. And I love that fight.
Jeff, notoriously, pardon the pun, you were late to the Conor McGregor movement.
Yeah, I was.
I like to bring that,
but appropriately late.
Yeah, okay. Well,
because he was hyped before he had proven worthy of that hype.
Sure.
I mean, he ultimately did prove himself worthy of that hype, and once he did, I jumped on just everywhere else, but like everyone else. But he was hyped as the next best thing long before he had.
Some could say you could be a visionary and foresee said hype. But I want to ask, are you on the Zabit bandwagon, or are you part of the camp who says, well, he's never really fought anyone? Like, Jeremy, to me, is the ultimate litmus test, right? At that weight class. Like, if you beat that guy, okay, now we know that you're onto something. He hasn't fought anyone like Jeremy. So are you all in on Zabit, or are you still waiting and seeing?
Well, again, that's where this fight comes in. And I will, you know, to bring it back to the Conor McGregor thing. You know, once he was able to go out there and beat Dustin Poirier, I was like, okay, now he's done something that really has solidified him in my mind. And before then, he was potential that some people thought he'd already arrived, but I don't think he had until he actually went out there and proved it against a top line guy. I think the Poirier of then was probably still a little better than Jeremy Stephens is now, but Jeremy Stephens is such an aggressive, tough guy that you have to be on your game in order to compete against him. So I would say that I wouldn't be all in on Zabit going into the fight, but I'm all in terms of being interested in watching the guy to see whether I'm going to throw my chips in on him.
Yeah, I'm with Jeff too, because this is very interesting to me, because it kind of reminds me a little bit of Yair Rodriguez and Frankie Edgar. You know, everybody was thinking Yair really had a chance to take a major step if he beat Frankie, and you just saw what happened. Frankie just demolished him. So I am very curious what's going to happen here in these, you know, prospects basically facing a veteran.
Are you sold on Zabit or not quite yet?
I'm pretty sold on him, and the little I've seen, he looks really good. You know, I'm not ready to anoint him the next star of the UFC, but I think, you know, if he goes out there and shows what he can do on Saturday, I think he could be for sure. I mean, don't you think he's probably in the top five rising stars of the UFC right now?
Absolutely. I had a chance to go to Mark Henry's house, where he trains him in his basement in southern New Jersey.
By the way, I had to stop you right there.
Yeah.
You tweeted out southern New Jersey. Come on, I'm a Jersey guy.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as southern New Jersey.
What, South Jersey?
South Jersey.
Oh, God.
Jersey Shore. I mean, southern New Jersey is that, come on.
All right, my bad.
You also
my
call
bad.
Subs hoagies, so we can't take
come on.
Wow. Was that a faux pas? I didn't know that was a faux pas.
Yeah, that's a faux pas.
My bad.
That's
okay.
A faux pas.
Well,
that's
the like southern going, part of New Jersey. I thought it was just.
I'm going to try to think of an appropriately inappropriate
Canadian.
Think about like Montreal, like you know. I'm not sure what it is, but I'll try to come up with it.
I guess it would be like saying that there are states in Canada as opposed to provinces.
Yeah. Which state is Montreal?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay,
anyway,
fair enough.
South Jersey. Gotcha.
And that, by the way, is a story in its own right. What goes on in that basement and the way Mark has it set up. But just watching Zabit literally 4 feet away from me and seeing the moves in his arsenal, him sparring for 10 rounds against different guys is just. I mean, he is so good, and you mentioned Jeff, and he's so dynamic. He compares himself to Bruce Lee, and it really is like watching, you know, water and him flowing out there is just incredible. But you mentioned, you know, Stephen's on my show, and I want to ask you about that because Stephen comes out on my show and says that after his loss to Jose Aldo on Monday, he said this on Monday, but it was in July, he was suicidal, and he wanted to change his family. He wanted to leave his wife. He wanted to leave his kids. He wanted to change his car. He wanted to change everything. And now he's starting to see someone and he feels different and he's more confident, all these things and more. And there's a part of me that is now infinitely more interested in this fight. But there's another part of me that's like, oh, man, I want to see Jeremy Stephens like build himself back up. And you're not going to do that against Zabit. Like, I think this is a really tough fight to come back to. Like, this isn't the fight that I commend him and applaud him for saying, yeah, no one wants to fight Zabit. I'll fight Zabit. But this isn't the guy, in my opinion. Like, I really think he's a future champion.
He could be. But again, he's the one who has to do the proving this weekend. And he may look like a future champion against the competition he's fought so far. I do think this is a step up in competition. And I think that he may rise to the occasion. And again, you know, we're jumping back to that McGregor analogy. I was never saying McGregor's, this guy's a bum. He's, you know, I was always saying he needs to let's wait till he faces somebody who is at a top level before we anoint him. And I think that's the same with Zabit. You look at this guy and you see all the tools and all the bells and whistles, but he still has that, you know, what's that blood and guts part of it? How's he going to compete against a kid who's going to come in there and it's going to come right at him? And when Zabit hits him, he's going to come right back at him again. Jeremy Stephens is tough and gritty and the kind of guy you also don't want to be in there with. I think both of these guys are in there against people who are going to present big challenges. And to me, that's the genius of matchmaking.
Mm. It's amazing. This card is so good that we're starting off talking about Zabit against Jeremy Stephens. And there's two title fights on the card, but I want to ask about your pick, the Ben Askren pick against Robbie Lawler. You wrote a great story, Greg, on Ben Askren and Tyron Woodley was fighting in the co-main event and their history and their friendship dating back to their days at the University of Missouri. And it's kind of interesting, by the way. So in the main event, you have Woodley fighting Usman. And then in the Askren fight, it's Askren versus Lawler. Lawler and Usman train with each other in Florida, and Askren and Woodley train with each other. Woodley has a win over Lawler, and Askren is kind of like an Usman. It's kind of weird how that it's like a team.
You know the other connection.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say one guy who was a big part of the story that I wrote earlier this week on the Missouri years was Michael Chandler.
That's right.
Michael Chandler considers both those guys, Askren and Woodley, like big brothers.
Right.
You know, like best friends with him. And he says he's been training with Usman and Lawler.
Oh, that's right.
So he's going to be there in Vegas, not really training. He's not giving away things, he said, basically, but he's going to be, you know, working with these guys to go against his so-called big brothers. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Does he feel weird about that?
He did say it's a little weird, but it's, you know, it's almost like a win-win no matter what. It's somebody, whoever comes out on top is going to be somebody he's close with. So
for those that don't know, could you tell us a bit about their history? Why they're so close? How long this dates back?
Yeah, so they obviously come from different places. I mean, Askren's from Wisconsin, and Woodley is from Ferguson, Missouri, but they both end up going to University of Missouri together. Woodley is a couple years older than Ben, and Woodley kind of came in and sort of helped her to sort of turn the program around. It wasn't that good until he got there. He and some other people sort of turned it around, and then they were able to get Askren, who was an amazing high school wrestler, who ended up going on to win the Hodge Trophy two different times, which was the college wrestling equivalent of the Heisman. So they both wrestled together for 2 years, I believe one weight class apart. And so they were in practice together, working with each other all the time. And then Woodley, after he stopped wrestling in college, he actually was a coach with Missouri after that and also worked with Askren. So they've known each other for a while. And then Chandler was younger than Askren. And so they all kind of formed this bond.
UFC did a great thing. And by the way, I urge people to read that story. And it was cool to see Askren tweeted out, I'm not sure if Woodley acknowledged it, but I saw other people acknowledge it as well, so kudos to you. I thought the UFC did a great thing on Monday, having a media day with both of them there, because you really get to see how different they are personality-wise, but how they kind of play off each other. The phenomenon, like, Jeff, I feel like in the old days of the beat together, we've talked about Askren and, you know, his style and why he would, you know, maybe never make it in the UFC or what was precluding him from being in the UFC. His rise in popularity over the last couple months has kind of blown me away. Like, he's the most popular fighter on this card. Like, you put up a video with Ben Askren now on our YouTube page, it kills everything. How do you explain this?
I kind of wonder about that as well. I don't know that I have an explanation, because it's not as though he's really changed from what he was before. I think maybe it was kind of the UFC fan anti-Bellator bias, maybe, because there is a kind of a certain element of the fan base that doesn't necessarily appreciate one promotion over the other. There are people who love to slam the UFC, so they're Bellator fans, and there are people who love to be with just the top promotion, and they kind of like step down and, you know, stomp on the Bellator thing. And, you know, then there are the rest of us who appreciate the good fights in both. But I think there certainly was some element of the fan base that thought, this guy, yeah, he was the Bellator champion, but he couldn't compete with the big boys. And then what did he do when he gets out of that contract? He doesn't come to the UFC. He goes off to the ONE Championship. And, you know, this is before the ONE Championship was on the rise like it is right now. He was basically the one guy over there competing against people who, you know, I've covered the sport for some many years, and there were people that he defended his championship against that I had never heard of before he stepped in with them. Now, he was incredibly dominant. But he was kind of like a forgotten guy. Now he comes back and he's sort of the same guy he always was, same personality. And somehow now it's accepted. And I don't know whether it's, in a way, maybe it's just that he's not, he doesn't have as much of an edge as some people do. He's kind of very happy-go-lucky. He kind of, he makes fun of Dana White, but in a joking way, in a way that even Dana White can't get angry at. He's very respectful of Robbie Lawler, and yet he says in the next sentence that he's going to go out and beat him. He's, you know, and he's very confident and yet not diminishing of his. It may be that in the time since Askren was part of the American MMA scene, the sport itself has changed, and nowadays the trash talk is much more mean spirited, and maybe Askren is kind of like a refreshing throwback.
Yeah,
see, I will kind of disagree with that because I think Robbie Lawler was the only opponent that Askren didn't go after. If this was anybody else, don't you think he would be a little bit more aggressive when it comes to trash talking?
Maybe, and you're right. He is the only guy that he didn't go after, but maybe that's why this is working, right? Because he is, as Jeff just said, and I agree, he's not boisterous, he's not loud, he's not obnoxious. It's kind of all done tongue-in-cheek. So maybe initially I was one who said, like, oh, this is not the one. I want to see him against Darren Till. I want to see him against Masvidal, any of these guys he was talking smack about. But in the end, maybe this was the best matchup for him.
Yeah.
Because it brought out this side of him.
Could be right. I do think his just personality is really what does it.
Yeah.
Because I bet you there's a lot of people that just have never even gone and watched a fight, but they see him on your show or they see him interview different places and they like his personality, calling out different people. And he really just always seems to have a response.
Yeah.
I feel like you've pressed him on some things and he always has a really good response.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. What happens Saturday night if it's a prototypical Ben Askren fight? Does this love affair, if he wins, you know, he wins, he remains undefeated, but it's, you know, lay and pray and not a lot of action, not a lot of damage. Does the honeymoon continue or does this all come crashing down to earth?
I mean, if he could do that to Robbie Lawler, I'm impressed. Even if he does just hold position and prevent Robbie from getting back up and, you know, unleashing his own thunder, I'm still impressed. I mean, I hear what you're saying that what was the famous Dana White line when Ambien can't sleep, it takes Ben Askren. I mean, this is the promoter of the guy who's promoted this guy. He's talked about this guy as being the most boring fighter ever. So if he goes out there and puts on an incredibly boring performance, you have to also take into consideration that he would be doing that against Robbie Lawler, who it's different for me, at least. If you're doing that against some person I've never heard of in the one championship, or even, you know, somebody in Bellator who would not be a top 10 person in the sport, if you're doing that against Robbie Lawler, you're still doing something right. So, I'm sure to some extent the honeymoon will be over maybe, but certainly wouldn't be for me if he goes out there and puts on a dominant performance. I don't care what it looks like. If he goes out there and dominates Robbie Lawler, I'm all in on this guy.
So this is the point where a lot of people are going to get annoyed at me, including probably you, Jeff.
Of course.
But I
speak for the people.
I believe that part of the charm here is that in many respects, this is the second coming of Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon. Everyone gets frustrated with their employer, right? Everyone gets frustrated with their boss. And obviously he's not going out there and, you know, stunning, if you will, Dana White. But he has, even while under contract now, even since he's been signed by the UFC, he has brought up things about the UFC, about Dana White. And I think people get a kick out of that. They kind of view him as this renegade guy who didn't expect to be here, who all of a sudden this trade happens and now here he is and he's talked a lot of smack and he hasn't backed off the smack. In fact, I'd say he's been just as, you know, aggressive with his smack towards the company. And people, I think, find that funny. He's breaking the fourth wall. And yes, I know he's not fighting the UFC, but even the little things like the social media stuff that's been going on between him and the UFC account, this is all really good. Dana, what he doesn't want to play the game, and that's fine. I think it's somewhat of a mistake, but he's just not going to be that guy. But Askren continues to poke him, as you said, and you know, take shots. And I think that's been part of the movement here. A lot of people are finding out about him for the first time. Like, who's this guy who, you know, is saying this stuff about the UFC and talking smack about everyone? There's just something there that I think a lot of people could get behind. It's a lot of fun.
To carry along your wrestling analogy, I mean, he kind of does it with a little bit of a wink too, because I mean, he certainly is not the one who has spoken the most trash at Dana White in his weight class. Or, you know, I mean, look at Colby Covington after he was, you know, he didn't get the title fight that he thought he deserved. He said a lot of pretty nasty stuff about Dana White and the UFC. Look at Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
Woodley has said some pretty heavy stuff. Those guys did not say it in any kind of a funny way. They said it. They have been speaking against Dana with a lot of anger and bitterness. And here along comes Ben Askren, who just kind of with a big smile on his face, yeah, Dana just brought in. They wanted to give me a guy that they thought could beat me. Dana's going to be sitting there with a big fat cigar.
It's amazing.
And so he kind of, you know, it's not so much that he's going after the boss, but he's doing it in a humorous way. And that, again, is going to keep endearing him to, certainly to me, and I would say some segment of the fan base.
You love this, Greg. You can relate to this, right?
In what way?
You know, everyone can relate to this.
Yes, this is why I love him, because I think I think his personality is what really drives it.
Yeah,
I think that's the best part about him. You know, I do worry about the style a little bit. You know, fans want to see people just go back. You know, blood everywhere and clobbering each other. You know, but I do think, you know, if he just keeps on winning, you think Dana White can't hold him back from a title shot. So
no, even if Dana's somewhat well, actually, you know what?
I'm not going there, man. Yeah. Come on, Dana White can make the title fights that he wants to make, whether, you know.
Yeah, that is actually a great point. I'm kind of shocked that you said that, if I'm being honest.
And you agreed with him
because what I'm saying is his popularity is through the roof. It's like some people just despise a Colby Covington or something like that. You know, so it's like if he doesn't get a title shot, people are like, oh, good, screw him. You know, but I do think Ben Askren just has for whatever reason, this draw with fans. And if he keeps on winning, the demand is going to be almost too high.
Are you guys surprised when this Woodley versus Usman fight was first announced? I will admit, I was annoyed at the fact that they weren't going with Covington, because they did the interim fight, which we all thought was bogus in its own right. He was promised. He went to the White House, all this stuff. I was like, are you guys surprised that Covington is kind of an afterthought right now? Like, I don't feel his presence. I don't feel anyone even clamoring like, oh, the winner of this is fighting Covington, who, by the way, has a beef with both of these guys, Woodley and Usman. I don't know if he made a mistake with his initial response and being so aggressive towards the UFC, but have you guys felt the same way? Like, no one's really talking about Covington right now.
Nobody's talking about him. Right now, he's putting out videos with bikini models and giving out betting picks.
But so it's like the wrong kind of heat, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the UFC should have put him in this title fight. Mm. I mean, I know this is a whole nother story.
Sure.
I think I've seen you're on the same side of me.
Yeah, of course.
With me here. Like, this was a no-brainer. We didn't need to rush in Kamaru Usman for this fight, but, you know, we got what we got, so.
But no one seems to be upset about it anymore. Like, I don't know, maybe that's a credit to Usman, maybe it's a credit to the matchup, but I thought his presence would, like, I thought he would maybe show up to Vegas and cause a stir. I think if he shows up, maybe, like, people will roll their eyes. I don't know, maybe they have fatigue.
I think maybe people roll their eyes because it's not real. I mean, there are people who talk trash in this sport, and you know, Errol, you've had enough conversations with me to know that I'm not big on the trash talk, but sometimes it's real and sometimes it's not real. And the whole Colby Covington shtick is just so, you know, B-level soap opera bad acting that you see through it. So you know, if this were somebody, I'm trying to think of some other, you know, Conor McGregor, all the stuff that he would say, you just think this guy really means all this stuff. And whether he really means every bit of it or not, he just can come across sounding authentic. And there are other people who just maybe to a lesser level can sound that way. Covington just never sounds authentic when he was talking his whole trash, his whole wearing his MAGA hat and all this kind of stuff. You know, he just doesn't sound authentic. I think he deserved the fight because he beat the people that he needed to beat in order to get there. So I think he, despite all that, the phoniness of his shtick, I think he earned a championship fight based upon his fight results. But, you know, Usman kind of has done more or less the same thing as he has. And to some extent, they're interchangeable parts. As in terms of fighting style, I think Usman presents more problems for Woodley than Covington does, but not that much different. I mean, I think they're pretty similar. I actually think that Woodley's probably has had his hardest fight when he's had tough sparring days with Askren in the gym. I mean, I really think that Askren's a better version of both those guys. So, and Askren, I know, believes the same thing too, right? Doesn't he, Greg?
Of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, that Covington deserves something more, but I can see why fans haven't really gotten that much behind him.
I'm not even sure if he wins, if he's going to get the next title shot. I feel like he's kind of doubled down on this FU UFC thing, and I think that might backfire.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
you think he gets the winner of this fight?
Who's this?
You think Covington gets the winner of Usman and Woodley?
He should. He should get the winner of this fight.
It sounds like he pissed off the wrong people.
I mean,
that's tough to say.
A lot of it has to do with probably with who wins, because if you let's say that Woodley defends his title. The next best guys down there, well, Askren will be one, but he's not fighting Tyron Woodley. Darren Till will be another one if he can come in and he fights Masvidal. If he wins that fight, he's probably not going to get a shot right away. I mean, I suppose if Masvidal were to do something, but yeah, I mean, Covington certainly in a meritocracy, and I know the listeners of this podcast always email because they hate when I use that word, or maybe they drink one. Maybe it's a drinking game.
Yeah.
Every time I use the word meritocracy, we got a lot of drunk MMA fans out there right now. But you know, in that world, Covington would be next in line. But I think you're right. You at a certain point when you start believing your own bad storyline and going double down on it. And turning your ire on the boss, I think, you know, you're running a risky gambit.
You know what I love about this main event? Did you want to say something?
No, I was just gonna say if only there was some sort of union or something to not have to worry about Dana's wishes and get the most successful people.
That's a whole other can of worms for a different day. You know what I love about this main event? I love a few things about it, and I wanted to see what you guys think. First of all, it's been relatively quiet for John Jones, no drama. And I know we just went through something 2 months ago, so that wasn't that long ago. And here we are, you know, on Wednesday. Something's going to happen tomorrow now that I said that. But at this moment, it has been quiet, no drama. It seems like he's in good spirits and everything's gone to plan. And on the flip side, you have Anthony Smith, who's this journeyman who's finally getting the shot, who's, you know, caught lightning in a bottle here, and he plays the role very well and people could get behind him. He's a great underdog. It's David versus Goliath. But I love that John Jones right now has the hunger of a contender who has yet to become champion. Like when you watch Embedded, if you didn't know that he was champion, you would think that he's a guy who's trying to get a title. Because he's been out for so long due to his own transgressions, he's still back and says, I want to fight 3-4 times this year. And he's not winning fights. Like, he's not beating Alexander Gustafsson and then saying, okay, you know, what's the money fight? Okay, get me the biggest name out there. Get me a super fight. Oh, Anthony Smith? Great. Thiago Santos? Great. Johnny Walker? Great. I love the fact that he has the hunger. You remember, you know, when we all kind of started to really get behind Conor, it was like he was fighting someone every month. It seemed like, right? He was calling out Diego Sanchez, I remember, to go to Mexico. He was calling out this guy, that guy, line him up for me. And Jones has that same hunger right now, and it's refreshing to see a champion like that. Like, when's the last time we saw a champion fight December 29th and then come back early March, like that time frame? It hasn't happened in a while. And so I think that's really cool that the best fighter on the roster right now, arguably, you could say, and maybe the best fighter of all time, depending on where you fall in that regard, certainly in everyone's top three, is that hungry to just fight anyone. That's cool. Yeah. I like that.
I love it too, because it's like he probably could have, I mean, I'm trying to think here exactly what the bigger name would have been, but Anthony Smith is not a big name. Telling you,
it's not a money fight.
Even walking the halls of ESPN, if you said, who's Anthony Smith? We literally did a story that was like, who's Anthony Smith? Because he's not the biggest name, you know? And John could have probably pushed to get somebody bigger. I know he wants, you know, potentially to fight DC again. I don't know what's going on there, but he probably could have gotten somebody bigger, but he was like, you know what? I'm coming back a couple months later. I'm going to fight the best guy in the division in terms of resume right now and take him out. So I really do like that attitude.
What's the biggest enemy in John Jones' life? It's been free time, you know, idle time. This is, you know, John has only been defeated by one fighter, and that's John Jones. That's the only guy who's ever really really defeated him, and he could beat him again. You know, John Jones could beat John Jones again if he's not careful, if he doesn't keep himself busy in the gym with some kind of something motivating him to move forward. And it doesn't always have to be that big money fight or some fighter who you think is unbeatable. I mean, for John Jones, think about it. If you're John Jones, you're looking at the rest of the roster. You're not looking at anybody and saying, geez, I hope I can someday beat that guy. You're looking down at everybody else. I mean, you're John Jones. So I admire the fact that he's doing what I think a champion always should do. A champion should never be picking fights. A champion should be the one who stands there at the ready and lets the promoter come and say, all right, here's the next guy we're gonna have challenge you. I think that's the way a champion should act, and John Jones is doing it.
Do you think Anthony Smith has a chance?
I think I would say this. Anthony Smith doesn't beat himself. John Jones, the only person that ever beats him is himself. So in a great confluence of those factors, you know, if John Jones does something, whatever, you know, if he does something crazy and Anthony Smith takes advantage of it, sure, lightning in a bottle could happen. But I think that the fact that John already went in and he came back from his long absence, and then he really erased the one kind of smudge on his record, which was that very close decision against Alexander Gustafsson. He erased that with a pretty dominant victory. I just have a hard time imagining him coming into this fight unfocused. And I think that was the one chance that Anthony Smith has. So I'll say if these guys fight 100 times, I think John Jones, you know, beats him at least 99.
Mm. Greg?
Well, 99 of 100, that's a pretty bad ratio for Anthony Smith.
I say at least 99. It could be all 100.
I'm with you on this. I'm not picking Anthony Smith. I do think he has a chance because this is fighting, you know, and
right.
You've seen what he's been able to do in his career. You land one good one, never know what's going to happen there. That said, I do think John Jones is just too much for him. You know, and Anthony Smith goes by this whole nickname of the legend killer, but, you know, two of those guys were past their prime legends. So I don't think beating Rashad Evans and Shogun is really going to say you're like the legend killer. You know, at their age, like he should have beat them. So I was impressed by the Volkan Uzdemir win, and then we'll see how he does. But I'm with you, Jeff. I think he kind of has to, I don't want to say land a lucky punch, but he kind of has to do that. You know, or take this to the ground and use jiu-jitsu. So, but I definitely think John is just going to be just too much overall.
Yeah, I mean, if John makes a mistake, I mean, really, right. That's really what it comes down to. John, if John's overconfident, but that's where I think that Gustafsson fight is really key here. The Gustafsson fight was the Gustafsson rematch was John's opportunity to recognize his own flaw of taking somebody lightly and look what happens. And now I'm going to take this guy Gus not lightly and look what happens now. You know, I go out there and I devote myself and I dominate him. So now he goes into this fight where he is about, what, like 11-1 favorite or something crazy.
I think it's the biggest Anthony Smith has the worst odds for a title fight ever. Is that possible?
Geez, I don't
11,
know.
11-1 or whatever?
I mean, I haven't done any research on that. I would have had a hard time imagining Matt Serra being less of an underdog against GSP, but it could be. It could be.
He's certainly up there with Kunitskaya and TJ Dillashaw the first time that he fought Henan Barral. Those mm-hmm. are some that are up there. Matt Serra. Do you think, though, if he does win, regardless of odds, considering who, because John Jones is John Jones, he's still undefeated. You know, very few people have won a round against the guy, for God's sakes. Would this be the biggest upset ever?
Yikes.
I kind of feel like it would be. How could it not be?
It could be, except, again, I think that Jones has had so much turmoil in his life that I think that it'll be, depending on how that fight were to play out, it'd be easy for those of us observing it to write it off as, well, Jones just wasn't Jones or whatever. You know, he was distracted. He was this, he was that. I mean, the bad thing is that if he's not, if he doesn't go out there and just smoke Anthony Smith, there's going to be all the talk about, oh, well, it was because he was dominant because of PEDs. He was dominant because of this or that. So I think John almost has has backed himself into a corner where he has to go out there and not just beat this guy, but beat this guy in a really dominant fashion.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. And then in terms of just Anthony Smith trying to have this crazy upset, I mean, it might be on that same level as the Matt Serra upset, just because of who John Jones is. A lot of people, including myself, based on last week's conversation, John Jones' greatest ever, to me at least, and a lot of people. And I think Anthony Smith was literally cut from the UFC, right, years ago? So it's like, this guy was cut, and now he's fighting arguably the best ever. I mean, it's a crazy story. And also, if you read Brett's story from today, he battled, he had like a drinking problem early on, and his grandfather passed away and had to deal with that, helped the family out. This guy has a really crazy backstory. So
one of my favorite things about Anthony Smith is that if you go to his Twitter right now, his pinned tweet is of, you know, the night he lost to Thiago Santos a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, saying like, I'm just getting started. And at that point, he's been around, you know, he's got like 30 plus fights and double digit losses. And a year ago, this guy was losing to Thiago Santos in Brazil, and now here he is fighting John Jones for the belt a year later. It's unbelievable.
I mean, he perseveres. So that's probably the biggest thing in his favor. If you look at all the measurables, John Jones hasn't beat every single area, but there's that one intangible where this is a guy who's not going to go out there and beat himself. He's not going to go out there and realize the moment is too big for him. He's going to go out there and do the best that he can do and be the best Anthony Smith that he can be. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but a lot of fighters just aren't that way, especially with those who are competing up against someone who should beat them. They just don't, they almost do the other guy's job for him by showing up a little intimidated. I just don't think that Anthony Smith's going to be intimidated. So, you know, is that going to be enough to beat John Jones? I tend to doubt that, but I think we're going to see Anthony Smith's best shot at it.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have no pressure, right?
He's playing with the house's money, for sure.
If he loses, he's supposed to lose, right? You know? And if he loses and competes strongly in this fight, then he comes out as a winner in a way, builds his own brand, looks good against one of the greatest of all time. It's all on Jones. So I don't know what type of pressure he's feeling personally, but I think Anthony's going to go in there and just be able to do his thing.
Okay, if John Jones loses, obviously you give him an immediate rematch, given who he is and the fact that he's never lost. If John Jones wins, is Thiago Santos next for him? Does he have to be the guy based off what he did last week in Prague? What do you guys think?
I don't have the rankings right in front of me right
now. Actually, but is that the guy? It doesn't even matter. Screw the rankings. What do the rankings mean? As Jeff knocks over the microphone over here.
No, I
feel like that he has the most momentum, right?
He probably does, and I actually was looking at the rankings earlier, and I was thinking, you know, there are several people who are ahead of him,
right?
But they're either matched up or there's other factors. I mean, in our rankings, we have Jones 1, DC 2. DC is not, that's not, that fight's not.
Not in light heavyweight. I mean, they want, I just don't think it happens.
And then I think we still have Gus third, but Gus is on his way down after his.
Plus he lost him twice.
Yeah. They're not going to have that again.
Right. The next guy is Ryan Bader. He's not, he's not even eligible to fight against this guy. And then we got Anthony Smith. So right there.
Who's after that?
Corey Anderson.
Okay, yeah, also has one.
So Corey Anderson will be a shot. Dominic Reyes, who's got a fight lined up.
Yeah.
And Latifi. So, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, Corey Anderson doesn't have a fight lined up. Maybe those two guys tangle. I don't know. I feel like Santos, yeah, he had a great performance. But, I mean, certainly, at least in the ESPN rankings done by our own Brett Okamoto, so I know they are the gold standard of rankings.
Wow.
Unlike the official
high
ones.
High praise.
Well, they are. I mean, you know,
one guy.
I've heard of him,
yes.
And that's more than I've heard of him more than I've heard of any of the people that are ranking for the UFC. So that was
really stupid on my part to say, let me look at the UFC rankings.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with our own rankings. So I would say that it would be a big leap up, and I know, well, who cares with the rankings? I kind of do. I mean, I feel like you want to move up a little bit. I sort of feel the same about this, you know, Israel Adesanya jumping up into even though it's a faux title fight, but it's still gonna, he would have a belt at the end of the night. I mean, he hasn't ever beaten a guy in the top five, and the same could be said of Santos. So I feel like you got to fight, you should have to fight someone in the top five before you get that title shot. That's me speaking. I'm not bald. I'm not the president of the UFC. The guy that runs the show there might be thinking more about momentum and all that. And so Santos certainly did did himself proud last weekend.
Saturday.
Yeah. I was trying to think Saturday, Sunday. I'm all mixed up with all the Saturdays and Sundays. But so he might be the next guy, but he wouldn't be my next guy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a tough call. Whether he gets it or not, the next Alshon, you got to say, is there a more intimidating person right now?
Well, that's
in the
thing.
UFC?
He's finishing guys. Anderson
he's just crushing.
Isn't.
He's running through people. Yeah. Three straight wins, and they've all been dominant.
Right.
You know, and also the guy has a Thor tattoo on his chest. Like, that would scare the hell out of me if I ever saw him on the street.
Also
but
amazing. I mean,
he's
this
amazing.
Guy was losing to David Branch at 185. A change in weight class, much like Anthony Smith, has helped him out greatly. But I think that, you know, there was a time, remember, before Anthony got this title shot, Corey Anderson was saying, why don't I get the title shot? And I think what got Anthony the title shot were the finishes. And I think what will get Thiago Santos the title shot are the finishes. I feel like that's a fight that you could sell. I don't know if Anderson versus Jones sells as much as Santos versus Jones just because of the highlight, right? What is his wins are decisions right now. They're good wins. They're impressive wins, but he's coming off a decision, a hard fought decision, no doubt about it, and an impressive one. But I think Santos has a lot more momentum. So if they don't go the DC route, I feel like they'll go the Santos Jones route if John Jones wins. Now, Jeff, you mentioned Adesanya Gaslam middleweight interim title fight. That's April 13th. Well, we finally found out what the main event for that April 13th card, UFC 236, will be. It will be Dustin Poirier against featherweight champion Max Holloway, moving up for the interim lightweight title. What do you make of this decision? The matchup itself and also the interim lightweight title being attached to it.
Well, I it's certainly a fun matchup. I mean,
a rematch.
A rematch, first of all, and a rematch in which, you know, this Max Holloway, who's looked like he's unbeatable over the last several years, he actually lost to this guy, which is, you know, I think some newer fans might find it hard to believe that anybody beat Max Holloway. But yes, Dustin Poirier did, Conor McGregor did, but that was a different Max Holloway. This is a whole different guy, but it's also a different Dustin Poirier. So this is a real interesting matchup. I like to see it. I'm also perplexed, confused. I'm not sure what other adjectives I would throw in there for the fact that we don't see that they're calling it an interim title fight and Tony Ferguson is not involved. The fact that they're even having an interim title fight at all is a little bit weird. I mean, there's a lot of strange twists there. I'm all in watching the fight, though. I think it's a great fight. I don't, you know, I didn't think that Adesanya, I didn't think him ascending into any kind of a title fight was, I thought that was premature.
Okay.
For the same reason I said with Thiago Santos, I mean, Adesanya had a very flashy win because it was against a flashy opponent in Anderson Silva, but that was a 43-year-old Anderson Silva, and he, he got a decision over him. So Anderson Silva is a legend, but he's not, he's 43 years old and on the way out the door these days. So, I actually heard Robert Whittaker saying essentially the same thing on your show on Monday, and I agree with him. I agree with him a lot. I think that on the other hand, he also thought that Kevin Gastelum is getting was sort of premature in getting a title fight, and I'm not sure I agree with him quite as much, even though he only won two in a row before after losing to Chris Weidman. But there's so much turmoil in that division that even winning two in a row is a pretty darn good thing. So definitely good for seeing the fight. The fact that there's a belt involved, I'm not as interested in.
I mean, in terms of that first fight, Adesanya and Gastelum, we talked about this before.
Yeah.
It makes sense. You're not going to strip Whittaker. It's the two top fighters at this point. I think they both deserve it.
Sure.
In terms of the other fight, I don't think you need the interim label. And I'm with Jeff here on that. It would be great if Tony Ferguson was involved. I know he was asked and turned it down for whatever reasons. So I wish Tony was in that, but I mean, that matchup is going to be awesome. Two guys who just go all out every time. Sign me up for that every night of the week.
Right.
So I don't think we needed the interim title fight. I will say I have no knowledge of this at all. I'm just guessing to get Max to jump divisions, they probably had to put something like that on there.
Well, I'm conflicted here because I think the same could maybe be said for Dustin Poirier. This is why I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted because it's such a great fight. On paper, it's a great fight, as you said. Greg, it's two guys who are fun, who are very, very, very rarely in boring fights, if ever. And it's a rematch of a fight that happened back in 2012. So it's always fun to see two guys fight again, you know, that many years later. It was Holloway's first fight in the UFC. He took it on short notice. He lost. He looks very different. He was just a kid when he fought in that UFC debut match. And I just think that there's a lot to like from a promotional standpoint. But then I think about this interim belt, and it bothers me. And we just got off last week talking about, okay, I get what you're saying, Jeff, about Adesanya, but this is the one time that the interim title kind of makes sense. The guy's sick. He was supposed to fight. He had an emergency surgery. Like, I could stomach it. And oh, by the way, I think it's been since the Colby Covington mess that they've had an interim title fight. And that was back in June. So we almost went a year without an interim title fight. By the time this fight happens, it will be 10 months between interim title fights. That's great. I like that. So why did you have to put an interim title fight here? Why, if you already had Gastelum and Adesanya, just make that the main event. And if you need Poirier and Holloway to fight, then make them the co-main event. I'm happy for Dustin Poirier, though, because this is a guy who has never fought for a UFC belt, who was supposed to fight for the UFC title at UFC 125 against Jose Aldo, and Aldo got injured. He ended up fighting Josh Grisby on a few weeks' notice. This is a guy who's been grinding. This is a guy who's been frustrated as of late. So I'm happy he's getting an interim belt. And I actually heard what Eddie Alvarez said last night at the ONE Championship media day, and he was like, oh, the interim belt is insulting to the fighters. It's their way of not paying the fighters. Actually, it's the opposite. Interim belt gets you paid. It doesn't matter in the contract if it's an interim title or a real title. You're still fighting for a title and you get paid as such. So I'm happy for Poirier, and Holloway gets a chance, but this wasn't the fight to make. Like, I don't think lightweight needs an interim title. I think Khabib will be back. I'm hearing now that he might be back even a little bit before November. So I think he'll be back in relative short order. Why did you need an interim belt? And why did you need one with the featherweight champion going up? Like if it would have been Ai Quinta who's won and took that fight on short notice against Khabib, I would stomach it. Certainly Ferguson should be there. He has yet to come out and say why he turned down the fight. But it just doesn't, it's just weird to me. Like, it's just, you already put an interim title on this card. This card is the first card in UFC history that has two interim titles on it. Like, that is a dubious distinction if there ever was one. Why did you need it?
And then it causes more problems just in terms of what's next, right? Because
right.
The other day on your show, Dustin said Dana and the UFC didn't even promise him a title shot if he won. So then it's like, what? Is he not guaranteed that potentially?
Oh, yeah.
And then
what just do you, look at Colby.
And then what do you do with Tony? Like, right. It's like he is clearly the most deserving. And so you're like, you're not. Then if you go with Tony over the winner of this, you're just like, what's the point of the interim belt? I'm with you. I don't hate it, but I just think it causes more confusion than it's needed.
Why would Tony Ferguson turn down a chance to get an interim championship, though? That's what I don't understand at all. It's because
it did so well for him the last time, right? It opened exactly. So many doors for him.
Yeah, he got so. No, the part of it. There's so many parts of it that are just odd to me. When you're a champion like Max Holloway is, I want to. I think that if you're going to then fight in another weight class, you want to fight the champion in that weight class. I mean, that's how Conor McGregor became a two-division champion. He stepped up and fought Eddie Alvarez. I mean, I know that back in the day, Anderson Silva would jump up to light heavyweight every once in a while, but that was kind of almost, it was just him distracting himself and putting a bigger challenge in front of himself. But I think Max is looking at this as a way to add a second belt, and it's not a real belt. I mean, if he walks around with these two belts, he's walking around with one that's a real one, and the other one is kind of like, you know, could just like disappear any second now. It just could sort of evaporate into the air.
Pay-per-view. It's a UFC 236 belt.
Yeah.
Like, it exists on that night, right, and we have no
right.
idea.
So it doesn't feel like the kind of accomplishment that maybe that he thinks it would be. So there's a lot of weird little twists to that, to this, this matchmaking. I love watching the fight. I love watching all these fights are okay. It's all about, you know, what's at stake. What are they putting up at stake, and does it really mean anything?
Yeah, because if you tell me right now, oh, Dustin Poirier wins on April 13th, he's fighting Khabib next, I would say, I don't know if that's true. And quite frankly, I think there's a pretty good chance that doesn't happen, right? With all the options out there for Khabib. So what exactly are these guys fighting for?
But you know what? It's I'm not going to put that on the UFC. That goes to Dustin Poirier. It goes to his management. that's why you have management. You have to have them say, okay, well, let's negotiate our contract here. Oh, well, I'd like to have this clause included in here that if I win, I get a title fight.
Right.
Or if you're a champion, if you're Stipe Miocic and you're fighting Daniel Cormier and you say, okay, well, if I lose, I get a rematch. I mean, I think that we've come to the place now where it seems like after every single UFC event, there are people bitching and moaning about what they are not going to get next. Hmm. And I think at a certain point we have to say, well, you know, Dana White is not Santa Claus. He's not the guy who's just, you just say, well, Dana, could you please, you know, I remember, I think it was you who tweeted out about the time when GSP got down on his knees and begged for a title fight. That's different. That's an appropriate time to beg because he had no stipulation saying that he was going to get a title fight. He had to beg for it. But when you get to a certain point in your career, you should be able to put into your contract what your demands are. And it's not just about getting paid more. It's also about whatever opportunity you want to be there for you at the end of the fight, win or lose.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to hear that there's nothing in writing after the Colby Covington situation just happened was very surprising to me. Like, you need to learn from history in order to not repeat it. So, you know, what is so great about sports? Your Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup. And why was that so great back in June of last year? Because they finally got over the hump and there was emotion there. And Ovechkin finally becomes a champion. And people love that moment, right? Why do people sort of roll their eyes at the Patriots now? It's because it's become old hat. So what do we love? We love that emotion when they finally get that championship and they've realized their dreams. That's why the Anthony Smith victory on Saturday, if he wins, would be so special. Well, what the heck? Like, what's the emotion here? Like what? Dustin Poirier is finally realizing his dream of being interim champion. It's hard to get behind, right, as a fan.
Is it almost like winning a conference title? You know, you're happy, but it's not really what the...
Yeah, but the conference title gets you to the championship. Look at Colby. It just happened. Look at Tony. Never got to fight for the... I mean, it just happened. Tony got passed. Tony was on the same card as Khabib in October and didn't fight for the belt, right? So, like, that's the part that drives me nuts. I try to just ignore it now. And just say on paper, okay, who cares about this stuff? Sometimes I agree. I know the fans say too. Like, I agree. Sometimes I worry about this stuff too much and I complain about it too much. But like, Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway is a great fight. But I almost feel like they muddy the waters by throwing these belts. Like, no one wants them and no one cares. And no one is looking at the guide on their TV or on a website and saying, oh, the interim title is on the line? Okay, now I have to order, right? I feel like you need to trust the audience a little more. You have to trust that we recognize how good that fight is.
Yeah, and on our website, when we are listing all the fights on a card, like this weekend, next to John Jones, there's a little C.
Yeah.
You know, next to Tyron Woodley, there's a little C. Because those are champions.
Right.
Those are actual champions. I mean, are we in the future going to be having to put little indications of people who are interim champions? I don't feel like that would be justified because the interim championships go away at the whim of the promoter. There's no, you know, the only way to get John Jones, get the belt away from John Jones is, number one, you have to beat him. And if you don't do that, you have to wait for him to do something really stupid, which he has done in the past, and then he gets stripped. But Dana White can't just say, well, John, you've been a good, acted well for the last 6 months, 8 months, and you just went out there and you won all your fights. But, you know, we're moving on. We're gonna take that belt away. No, he can't do that. There would be too much an uproar in among the fans and amongst everybody, among the fighters. But with interim belts, you know, Colby Covington was an interim champion. Tony Ferguson, interim champion. What does it mean? It means nothing.
I think the UFC just thinks that fans don't care like we do. A lot of people don't care, and they just, when they're marketing this pay-per-view, they're like, two title fights.
I know, but
everybody check it out, you know? And the diehard fans, the media, the fighters, they care. But there's a lot of people who are going to pay because they're like, what? Two title fights? You know, they don't watch as closely. And I bet you the UFC doesn't think, I bet you they don't think people will even care like we do. Am I off on that?
Maybe. I just think that they think that slapping a title on a fight makes it more important. And I would like to say that I think the audience, for the most part, is more knowledgeable. And we just care about the matchups now. We care about the stories, the fights, the matchups on paper. Putting an interim title to me actually devalues the fight in a weird way. Let me ask you about a fight that isn't happening, at least anytime soon here, because last week we talked a lot about George St. Pierre. This was a day before his press conference. Now the press conference has come and gone. It was great to be there and great to cover it. But, you know, the news to come out of it, other than the fact that he retired, was his explanation about the whole Khabib Nurmagomedov fight. Do you guys feel, now that you've heard from George and you've heard Khabib plea for him to stick around, do you feel like we were robbed of a great fight here, or do you understand why the UFC ultimately said no to it?
Yes, I do think we were robbed of a great fight. I mean, GSP versus Khabib, like, who wouldn't watch that? We actually put out a panel the next day on, like, who would win this hypothetical fight, and basically everybody said, I think everybody but one picked Khabib. But regardless, I still want to see it, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing matchup.
I'm surprised about that. All-time. I thought more people would pick GSP.
Yeah, I think it just age is where it's at right now, you know, and they think Khabib's in his prime and George is kind of on the end of his, you know, if he was to keep fighting, he would be on the end of his career, you know, so I think that's part of it. But I think that would be a great matchup. And we did get robbed of it.
Yeah, I guess we did. I didn't think too much about it until I saw Khabib's Instagram post, essentially, you know, honoring GSP and then inviting him to stick around long enough to fight him. And then I thought, wow, you know, because I guess I always thought, well, it was GSP just always trying to get that one last big payday. And I didn't really think about too much the other side of it. I didn't really give a lot of thought ahead of time to the Nurmagomedov side of it. But he also wanted this. This is also, it would be a big thing for his own legacy to go out there and defeat, you know, the great George St. Pierre. So, we got robbed of it. But you know what? George retired at the time he was supposed to retire. And I know that you had his coach on, Firas Zahabi, on the show the other day, and Firas was not shutting the door. He was maybe closing the door over and leaving it ajar for George to possibly return. But I don't know. When I listened to you, to George, in the interview that you did with him, he seemed like a guy who was ready to move on in his life and was not walking away from martial arts. He was walking away from the competition of it, and he seemed pretty happy to do that. So I'm not too upset about the fact that we didn't get this fight.
Yeah, I'm not too upset about it either, and it was really great. Like, how often you get to see press conferences like that in our sport, right? I mean, it's usually awkward. Chuck Liddell knocked out, Anderson sticking around and fighting, you know, guys who are nowhere near title contention right now. It's usually like this discussion that we have about Diego Sanchez, should you stick around? This guy's coming off a title victory, making history, and is holding a press conference and is doing it on his terms. Like, this is unheard of in our sport. So there was something magical about just that scene, and also him talking about how much he detested fight night. And just like the anxiety that he dealt with, loved the buildup, loved the camaraderie, but just never loved all the nerves that came with it. And to see him hate it so much, but then be so good at it. And now to see like all the relief just come off his body and just, he was so happy and free as a bird. I agree with you. Like, I don't think GSP comes back, and I think he's very happy with the idea of walking away now. But there is also part of me that's like, damn, that was a really good fight. Like that fight on paper, sign me up for that. Imagine they met at 162.5. So it's like 7.5 down for George, 7.5 up for Khabib. Imagine they met and no titles. I don't think you need it. I think this fight is so good. It is bigger than a title. I want to know, can GSP take down Khabib? Can Khabib take down George? Can Khabib stand with George? Can George, you know, rough him up on the feet? I think his boxing is better. So like, there's just so much there that is so, you know, Khabib being undefeated. Ultimately, so there, like, I think it's okay to say we were robbed and it's kind of a bummer that we're probably not going to see it. But I think it's also okay to say the UFC made the right call, right? I mean, like, we complain about, you know, guys not getting title shots or earned, especially in this division, which is kind of a mess with Ferguson and Poirier and all this stuff. It would feel a little bit weird. So I thinking about it a week later, I think they made the right call, but I'm also kind of bummed that we're not getting it. You know what I mean?
That's exactly where I'm at too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would cause more drama in that division that already has a lot of drama. So,
well, remember that day when this all came out? I quit, just said, release me, and then Poirier, like, they were all mad about it. It would be way worse if it actually got signed.
Yeah, this division of all divisions to do that. But, yeah, I mean, look, maybe rob is too strong of a word, but everybody wants to see that matchup. I don't care how old GSP is or if he's on the tail end. And that's why I don't totally – I I'm putting it at above a 0% chance he returns. So
what are you putting it at?
I'm putting it at like 20%.
Whoa, that high?
Just because he...
I thought you'd take five.
As of a week ago, he was willing to fight a guy, you know? So it's like he still has at least a little bit of fire.
I will say the one thing that kind of... Like, I thought it was all perfect, except for that it did seem like he left the door open. Like, it'd be nice to say, I am done and I am done and never call me again, right?
Yeah. Doesn't
that feel cleaner?
And then Frost goes on the show and says it too. It's like, this is the guy that's closest to him that knows him best. And he says, eh, you know what? There's a couple of guys out there that he'd be willing to come back for.
Yeah.
So it's like his own trainer that's been with him forever is saying he might be one to come back. Like, that's why I don't think he's completely done.
Is it possible that there's no word for retire in French?
No, retirer.
All right. Maybe he just doesn't know that word.
You didn't know that?
But he said it finally, right? He didn't say it in 2013.
I know.
Also, how about the fact that he said that he regrets the way he handled that whole scene in 2013, right?
Yeah.
I was surprised.
I was surprised at that too. But I don't know. I remember back in those days, he was a pretty rattled guy.
Yeah.
And especially in the wake of his fights. Even he was winning those fights. I don't remember his face. Vaguely after the Hendricks fight,
his face
he was pretty
mess.
Beat up. But I remember even the fight against Nick Diaz
and
in Montreal.
Condit.
Yes, he was looking pretty bad.
Yeah.
Even in fights that he had essentially dominated. So this is a guy who was, he was putting himself through the grinder and coming out the other end as a winner, as a champion. It was time for him to walk away. He comes back, gets that one more moment. And, he has the wisdom to step away for good. So good for him.
Perhaps his greatest impact on the sport is what he said to the fighters in the middle of that press conference, which was essentially, you tell them when it's time to leave. Don't let them tell you when it's time to leave. And then 2 days later, we see Stefan Struve say, you know what, I think I'm done. He also kind of left the door open as well. But I feel like now this might be a thing. Fighters actually saying, I don't want to be that. I don't want. Maybe the Chuck Liddell thing woke up some people. It's hard, I know. It's easy for us to sit around here and say, you should retire. But wouldn't that be great if guys are retiring on top?
Hey, if you're everyone from the Supreme Court to the fighters in the UFC, they act unprecedented. They look at what's happened before and they make the decisions based upon what they've seen before. And the fighters have seen guys come back again and again and again and take more and more of a battering. And every once in a while, one of those guys comes back and has success. They want to do that. They think they can do that. But then they see a guy who walk away gracefully at a time of triumph. That looks pretty damn good if you're another fighter. And you wouldn't want to do that? I would.
I mean, as we spoke about last week, like, you don't want to get into sad times. You know what I mean? Like, when we saw Henan Barão, how many times has he lost in a row now? You know, BJ Penn, like...
That's the norm in our sport.
It's sad to watch where you're like, wow, I watched this guy in his heyday. He was an amazing fighter. And now it's like, one-tenth of what he used to be.
Yeah.
You know, so I if GSP does stay retired, I think it's great, for him to get out of the game, especially in this sport where people are trying to punch each other in the face, at the right time.
Greg said 20%. What do you put it at?
For him, what percent?
Like, do you think he fights again?
I don't think 0%. He fights again. I'm not going to say 0% because I wouldn't say 0% for anything in this sport, but I'll say, 1% or something like that.
I'm there too. Although, November or so is a long ways away, so a lot of crazy things could happen. That was my one.
Maybe a grappling match. Maybe he gets Habib
in the
Eddie Bravo grappling thing, or Metamoros if that's still around, Polaris. Yeah. I mean, one of these grappling tournaments that are.
I'd be down for that.
That's a little bit more. That to me, that's where the older fighters, particularly those who have a ground game, and I think nowadays pretty much everybody in this sport has to have at least some ground game. That's where these guys should be gravitate. So they're not taking, concussions. They're not getting beat up in the head, and they're grappling, and they're still competing. They're still training in order to compete. Some of these guys who can't walk away, maybe that's where they need to go.
Great point. All right, gentlemen, we're out of time. Greg, I'll see you in Las Vegas. You got anything else coming out this week?
Yeah, we got a big Ben Askren feature from Brett Okamoto Thursday. Full breakdowns on both title fights Friday. So, and the Undefeated is working on a piece on Kamaru Usman. So we kind of have, every angle covered.
That's fun. How about you?
I am not going to Vegas, but I will be here in Bristol, holding down the fort, probably sitting in our building all by myself with the music blaring and watching the fights. I will be writing a post fight, you know, what just happened kind of column, and that'll be that.
You know, Bristol is the Vegas of Central Connecticut.
Yes. Yeah, it'll be exciting. I mean, I'll see if I can keep myself calm down with all the craziness going on around here. You know,
between what kind of music are we playing?
No, I won't really be playing. Oh, okay. I have to keep myself focused.
Focused. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I will be there as well as of tomorrow, and we'll be doing the weigh-in show Friday morning on ESPN Plus, and then there's a preview show. And also, I want to remind everyone that I'll be on the radio on Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's when I love to hear from the fans. So please call in 1-888-STATE-ESPN. I want to hear from all of you. So that's 4 to 6, the Helwani Show on the radio.
I listened. It was good.
Yes. Call in. Feel free.
I will. If I was in the car and I didn't have the thing programmed into my thing, or else I would have, it was a push button, I would have done it, but I'm not dialing my phone while I'm driving. You could be like, you want to hear me crash?
No, no,
of course
I
not
want that. All right, we're out of time. Great job, guys. Pleasure as always. Greg Rosenstein, Jeff Wagenheim, thank you very much for the time. Thank you to our guy Troy back there for producing. We are off to Las Vegas. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy the fights and enjoy your weekend.